Welcome to the Presentation Podcast, Season 6, Episode 130. Let's start another Design Studio conversation about presentation design and the business of presentation. Here are the show hosts, Troy Koller, Nolan Hames, and Sander Johnson.
Okay, before we introduce our guest and jump into the conversation for this episode, with the dual release of our last episode, we kind of missed out on talking about industry news. And I know there is a lot happening in the software presentation space, so I think we should just try and find a few of the highlights we can squeeze into this episode.
Well, let's talk about the free version of Teams.
There's a free version of Teams? Okay, tell
me
about it.
Oh my gosh, yeah. So it's cool. The concept is cool. It's designed to keep personal and professional worlds separated in the office suite. So all files, contacts, and meetings for each account are separate from each other. It allows you to switch between business and personal with, according to Microsoft, with just a click in Teams.
Just a click.
Yeah, just a click. And, the concept is pretty cool, but Nolan, and I know you're going to be... you can relate to this.
Oh boy.
The statement in reading about this that shivers my timbers is this: personal features in Teams are available today for free for people around the world. If you're using Teams for work, just click on your profile to add a personal account.
Oh boy.
Oh, there's the statement.
Seriously. I mean, what we're getting at, everyone, and I'm sure many of you have faced this, but in the office world, having multiple accounts often creates additional problems. It's not as easy as they say to switch between those accounts, is it?
No. Well,
it can be, but
find switching between the accounts easy. But it's the problem of when you're in one account, you then have no access to all the content in the other account. So, I'm thinking, if I'm on this personal account, can I get to my TLC, I want files from TLC Teams or a client that we're part of. So it becomes more of a juggling act of knowing you got to get everything. The stars have to align.
Yeah. And again, we won't go into it. One of the issues we're dealing with right now, I have a friend who was trying to access a feature on PowerPoint online, and it would work in one browser, but not another browser. And she sent me screenshots, and one of them said, hello, Mary Smith, and the other one had her email address. So it was, she just didn't understand, and rightfully so, like, which Microsoft account am I signed into? Which is the paid one? Which is the not? And, moving on, Troy, what do you have?
I have another announcement one. So this is actually Windows 11 has been announced. So, I'm on the Windows side, and that's a big deal. So this kind of goes with your note, Sandy, because it says that Windows 11 Teams is now bundled or included with the operating system as part of the install. I'm guessing that's where the personal version is going to be included for everybody. I mean, if you're on your phone, you can download it, or if you're on Mac, you can download it, but all the Windows users are getting Teams no matter what. So that's kind of a big announcement, is that Windows 11, which looks really good. I'm actually looking forward to it. We can already see some tweaks we're going to go to it for our rollout. Our IT person is already... chomping at the bit to start, being fun and exploring it. Hey, you know what? The other thing that goes with that, though, is that the end of this month is Skype for Business. I mean, we're very Skype centric, but it
really
goes away.
Ooh.
Yeah, we use it for our internal team. We don't talk to clients with it, but it's how, most people use Slack. I understand. I'm not a slacker. that didn't wake up out right. But we use Skype for Business, and I just don't really like the Teams interface.
Is Skype and Skype Business personal everything? It's going away?
I think it's just Skype for Business.
Skype for Business,
kind of is a part of Teams. I just don't really like the way Teams organizes the conversations.
It's pretty random, isn't it? The conversations in Teams are so. I use it exclusively with one client, and it's sometimes impossible to find or track your conversations.
Well, to the point, it's also the multiple profiles. If you're in a profile, you don't see the conversations for the other profiles that you were just, this whole I don't know. But anyways, Windows 11. There's my news. That's another news item that's coming up and it's been announced and it's big.
Stock videos have come to PowerPoint on the Mac, finally. It's on the current channel, so you don't need to be on the beta or insider or whatever they're calling it. But yeah, so those are the high quality real stock videos. Not sure where they're sourcing them from, but just go to insert. You got to go to the insert tab, and then under videos, if you pull down, you'll see them there under where you normally, like, you know, get an online movie or movie from file. PC has had that for months, for a long time, but we now have them on the Mac.
I was just checking. Yep, they're there on the Windows side. I can't say I've actually used them.
Yeah, I've never used them either, but they're there.
Huh. There's some texture backgroundy ones that I...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'll use these for demos and stuff, all the tutorials. I didn't even know they were there, Nolan. So I guess they've been there and...
Hey, Nolan, can you make a transparency? Can you use what can you do on the Mac? You know, it's so limited on the in PowerPoint. I think you can recolor and that's about it.
Can you do transparency?
Crop the shapes, you can't.
Oh, no, you can definitely crop videos. I'm not sure if you can make a video. Can you make a video transparent?
Can you use a transparency tool?
I don't think you can on a video. You know, you could always do that on the in Keynote. And that was something I actually played with a lot when I was working in Keynote for various effects.
I was just curious. I didn't mean to derail the convo. But
yeah, no, you can change, like, you know, brightness, contrast, and that kind of stuff. But you cannot, I don't think. Sorry. Yeah. Anyway, what's other? I don't think you can make it transparent. You can, of course, put a transparent box over, a video if you want to do something like that. All right. Any other PowerPoint news?
Yeah, I'm gonna stick with the Windows thing, but now it's Windows version of PowerPoint. We are losing, this is a big announcement from Windows that I know you all caught. It says we're losing the Office presentation service. You guys are, I can hear it. You're dismayed and concerned.
We are.
Yeah, because you don't know what the heck it is.
I don't know what year it is.
Just never used it.
What it means is when you go to Slideshow Present Online, there's an Office presentation service option that is no longer there. Of course, the question is, who has used this button in the past few years? Because I believe it has been a broken service that Microsoft rolled out a few years ago. It was very cool. And then it just kind of, like, technology moved on, but the button didn't. So
it didn't work, yeah,
I think they just kind of forgot about it because it stopped working at least a year or two ago. PowerPoint is now catching up with the new world and officially saying, hey, let's use Present Live, which is available in PowerPoint for web. So the takeaway is another desktop feature is gone, but we really don't care because it wasn't working anyways.
Overall, there's been a lot happening sort of that's newsworthy. There's the biggest thing. There's this visual refresh of all Office apps that is coming, has arrived in parts. We're going to talk about it in the next episode because there's a lot going around. There are also some other default blank presentation bugs fixed and things like that. But we're going to talk about that whole refresh, including that there's some issues with the QAT that I ran into this morning. We can talk about that, but we'll get that sorted out and talk about that next week. And lastly, congratulations to you both for being re-awarded Microsoft MVP status again this
and
year.
And congratulations to you as well,
Nolan. Yes, thank
Nolan.
You.
It's all of us. It's pretty exciting.
Okay. And congratulations to all of our colleagues as well.
Yes.
Who were re-awarded this year.
Okay, folks, this episode, we get to talk money and we have facts to back up the conversation. We also have the Presentation Guild's 2021 State of the Industry and Salary Survey Report. That is a mouthful, but that is the real name, and it does say a lot, which is full of amazing data collected specifically about compensation of presentation professionals, us. And we are joined by Bethany Auk, president of the Presentation Guild. So we have kind of a powerhouse team of information between our own Sandra Johnson, who started the Presentation Guild survey project a number of years ago, and Bethany, who is the lead on the team who developed the survey and report this year. So this is going to be good.
Hi, Bethany.
Hey, Sandy.
We're so glad you're here. We love you so much. I know before we get into the survey, because that's why you're here, you're going to give us the lowdown on the state of the industry survey. its results and what it means for those in the presentation world. So before we get any deeper into the survey results, tell us about yourself, your business, the guild, and then maybe just a little bit background on the survey.
Great. So I started in presentation actually as a litigation consultant years ago. And
I didn't know that.
That's right. I started out traveling for trials with trial lawyers, and I loved the work, but I did not love the like weeks long on-site trial experience where I didn't see friends or family for like multiple weeks at a time. So around 2012, Tara, who was working with me at that company, and I left, and we formed Slide Rabbit. So that's how Slide Rabbit came to be. And now we basically get to do the same thing, help people tell stories better and more visually, except with every industry. And very rarely is there a late night, which is wonderful now.
I love it. How did you come up with that name?
Slide Rabbit. Okay. So every time someone asks me, I'm like, I really need to think of a better story for this.
Make up a different story each time. That's the thing.
If I could be that creative on the spot, it would be excellent. I would be an improv actor. But this is just so silly. I was thinking about names and a lot of the things in our industry. You know, we've got presentation studio and presentation, and everything's kind of studio and slides and presentation. And I was trying to figure out something that would stand out a little bit. And it was around the time where all the new companies were like something animal, like MailChimp, you know,
SurveyMonkey,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And I was like, well, it's slides, and I want it to be like cute and small. So, and my husband used to say, like, just as an exclamatory, like, holy rabbit. And so it just like happened, like Slide Rabbit was just a thing. And the logo just kind of appeared to Tara, and we just went with it.
Nice. I had actually never heard that story. So.
I love it.
Wait, before you go any further, could you just quickly name off? See, I thought I had the connection. I thought for sure I have a talking note. I have a note about this. I thought I had this down. Quickly name off your pet names, all the animals in your house.
Okay. All right. So there's Coach Fitzgerald, named after the Northwestern football coach. There's Barbara. We call her Barbie. And she's a dog. We have Maya the cat. Then we have three fish. There's Steve, John Wayne Gacy, and Becky. And then we have like lots of anemones and corals as well.
See, I thought for sure I had the connection of Slide Rabbit being an animal thing, and you guys have so many amazing animal names. I thought for sure the new story. Next time, that's the story. Yeah,
let's talk about the survey now.
Okay.
Give us the elevator pitch on what the survey was. You know, questions, how many people surveyed, what.
Sure. So, you know, part of the guild's mission is about kind of elevating this presentation design as kind of like a principled area of design rather than just kind of cramming it into graphic design or something like that. And so the survey kind of, and Sandy, really, this is maybe your story to tell, but the inception of it was about kind of solidifying the idea that this is a real discipline and that people in this discipline are their own kind of category of professional. And so the questions in the report are really geared to figuring out what is the state of this industry, because it is an industry, and how can we show the world that, I always like to think of it as like the younger generation coming up, like, this is a real job that you can have. And here's what people in our industry can make. And here's what the industry looks like. So for me, it's all about kind of legitimizing what we're doing as its own thing, rather than just kind of cramming it in with other design areas. And I think that, you know, Sandy, tell me, is that kind of where you feel like it came from?
Exactly. So now we as professionals, or someone new getting into the industry, someone applying for a job, can kind of go in with expectations,
right?
For the number of years they've been in the business, what they can expect to negotiate with an employer. We have anecdotal stories of one of our members, guild members, who was able to negotiate her salary and her role description because of the salary survey. Somebody was able to take that and use the information immediately.
Yeah. Yeah.
How did we do on results this year? You know, I mean, not results, but like, how many people did we reach out to or get to respond?
We The total survey was like around 26 questions, I think. And it's opt-in, and non-members alike and members can take it. We try to kind of spread the links far and wide throughout social so that people can contribute. So I think we had about 214 responses, and those came from 26 different countries. So it's, I will say the majority of that is the US. I think it was like 65% US, but we still have a pretty good number of international respondents as well, which is exciting.
And that's mostly members, we assume, right? But not all.
Yes, we assume.
It's open to non-members.
Yes, and you can fill it in anonymously. So you can opt in to supply your email or not. So we don't have a super clear vision on exactly how many are members, but because of, you know, how we promote and the people who tend to follow us, I would assume that there's a lot of membership.
Because of the anonymity, right?
Yeah.
Associated with it.
Because we're talking about some sensitive stuff. So anonymity is good.
I think a lot of it has to do with how people self-identify too, because a lot of people in our industry, I think, or at least I am, fairly self-taught on the job, right? It's not like you major in presentation services or something like that. You learn communication skills and all that stuff, and then it comes together and you learn the software. I did, at least on the job, and then you can be kind of a presentationist. But I think there's a lot of people out there who are in marketing or other business services who end up doing so much presentation work, but wouldn't necessarily identify themselves with the industry. And I think that's another goal, is to kind of change that and give them more community around experts in the area and the arena.
So who was the team that sort of worked on it? Not just getting respondents, but, you know, analyzing the data and, you know, writing the report and all that stuff. Who are the elves behind the scenes?
Oh my gosh, there were so many. I mean, the survey has evolved over the years. So even, you know, the original authors are still credited and still involved. And that's, of course, you know, Echo, Swinford, and our own Sandy, of course. Glenna Shaw has been heavily involved. And then Sheila B. Robinson joined the Guild Board last year. She has got a lot of survey experience. So she was involved, and also Steffi Hogan. So that's a big team just to kind of get the survey off the ground. And that's just the questions. Once the responses come in, then we've got a whole nother group. And we have got to give a huge thank you to Monica Longoria, who took on the giant responsibility of analyzing all the data and getting us some of the stats that we could use then in the resulting report. And then, of course, we had editorial help and Marcom support from other directors like Rick Altman and Rick Brettschneider, Jen Parkinson, Tony Ramos, Steve Rinsberg. So it's like everyone has a hand in it, a little tiny hand helping out to get it off the ground. It's a big project.
I like the design. I appreciate that it seems to be walking the talk about not just using pie charts and sort of there's really good, I think there's really good and appropriate, let's put it that way, data viz in it.
Yeah, that's all Julie. So I think I missed mentioning her, but Julie does the both the art direction for the Guild's social and kind of public brand face, but also she did this like in all the work for the design on the report once Monica was done with the analytics. So she, you know, had a big helping hand in that group as well.
Yeah, it is beautiful. That is for certain. Okay, so hey, I got to ask a question about the respondents, because the Guild uses this term presentationist. And I know people on the podcast here, if you've been around for a while, you've heard it, because Sandy is the one that introduced it to me. So I'd like to just get who is a presentationist, and what did the survey tell you about them, these presentationists?
So, I mean, our definition is really anyone who works in and around presentations. So that could be creating presentations, supporting them, even delivering them. Anyone who's large part of their work is around kind of presentation services or delivery. They're all presentationists to us. And in our community, we try to build all three of those kind of disciplines within the community so that we have kind of the cross-functional support. It's important, I think, in the industry not to just silo into just design or, you know, just production or even event production, right? These people are supporting the delivery. So we're very inclusive with the term.
I think it's a great thing, because within the within the project, you know, or within the report, there's a whole section on job title. And I love it because everybody has different job titles, but presentationist isn't one of them. So I think the guild and the survey does a great job of just creating a new term that encompasses everybody. And then everybody gets to say, this is what, you know, I'm called within this bigger realm. So just had to call it out that I think it's actually a brilliant idea to come up with a new term for something that doesn't kind of like cubby everybody up. But yeah, I think it's great.
So presentationist wasn't invented by the guild. It was actually a moniker of someone who is on the board of directors at the guild. Do you know who was the first self-proclaimed presentationist in the world?
Tony?
Yes. If you follow him on social media, yes. If you follow on social media, that is his handle. And he graciously turned that over to the guild to use.
Every time I hear it, it sounds very, very like a turn of the century, like Victorian, like steampunk something. I don't know. Like, I kind of like it.
I haven't had that vision, but I guess I'm going to start crediting Tony for this because I've been crediting
name
you.
For a doctor or surgeon or something.
That's awesome. Well, how old are presentationists according to the, because I know this is a really good, a very interesting topic to me, according to the respondents you had, several hundred respondents, like what is the age bracket and gender of a presentationist?
Okay, so I was actually kind of surprised by these stats. The age bracket is most commonly about 50% of our respondents were in the 40 to 55 age range. And that really surprises me because I still run into clients all the time that don't even know that this industry is a thing, right? And yet we have had people who've been working for, you know, in the professional world for quite a while that have been executing these services. So that was a shocker. But the rest was split really between older and younger than that group. So it's kind of an even spread.
And the gender?
More likely to be women. I think 54% were women in our respondent group.
See, here's what I want to say. For the record, on the women versus men thing, not gender naming or anything else, just women versus men. On the income thing, Lori's income is greater than all of the guys in our company. Just talking personal, giving some information, and as it should be, she's the lead founder, she's the one that did it all. And also, now that I'm thinking about it, maybe we're following the trend a little too closely because we are four guys to... eight women. So women being the majority in our company. Come on, guys. We're working hard. Let's catch up.
Slide Robin is the same. I mean, we are started by women. We're women owned and operated. Just myself and Tara are the business owners, but we didn't get a male employee until 2019. And then joined Paul, and he's been wonderful. And actually tomorrow we have an intern starting, which I'm very excited about. And cool. His name is Alejandro. So we're really starting to close our gender gap as well.
Nice.
So as long as we're starting to talk about salary and earnings, let's really get into a big moment here. What do presentationists earn, Bethany? And then I think I do want to talk about other benefits too, but let's start with the salary part of it.
Well, it hasn't changed much since previous years, honestly. A large portion of us, which is about 44%, earned between $50,000 and $100,000 in US dollars per year. And that's annually. For a salary. So that's on par with like other graphic designers, essentially. Women in our industry actually have a slightly higher median income. So we do a little bit better on average or on the median scale, but the men actually are more likely to earn over six figures. So take from that what you will.
I'm always interested to see the hourly rate, which ranged from, below 50, 17% were making below 50, to some people making over 250 an hour, 6%. And all right, guys, spill it. Who here is making $300 an hour?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I think we're
going to go with the litigation side, Bethany.
Yeah.
in litigation, we did, our bill rates were quite high, quite high. Leaving that industry, we're back down to like more normal graphic design agency rates.
The median being, because I know it's listed in the report, I'm trying to find it.
Yep. The median in the report was $75 an hour. But I think, you know, that we have to keep in mind that that spans respondents from differing business scenarios. So that's employees, freelance, kind of agency, and it's maybe not full time since they're not paid on an hourly rate. But essentially, that's, it's something to keep in mind when we think about median rates.
And now I do know, just sort of a side note, I have heard a lot of chatter recently about designers for pitch decks for startup businesses earning that $250 plus an hour, and you know, $10,000 for a 10 slide pitch deck. So that's, I think that's one place where, yeah, you can definitely make quite a bit of money.
Now, days. Nolan, to get into it, we're totally diverging here, but I see most of those. I mean, the way we've done them is they're actually flat rate projects. So they're a startup. They need to know their budget. And we'll just say, I'm going to use your numbers because I like your numbers better. We're going to charge you $10,000 for your deck. The end result may be 10 slides. You may have designed 100 to get to there. So you can say, hey, the end result was 10 slides, and you use like the Cliff Atkinson metric of that cost you $1,000 per, wait, would that be 1,000? Let me do some quick math here. You know, that $1,000 per slide, but the reality is it was 100 slides that they actually designed. I think a lot of those are flat rate projects and they end up with a higher billable because, you know, pitch decks have to be pretty concise.
That could be. And also it's just, it's, you know,
it's good money. I'm not saying it's not good money.
Good money. And I do know, I have been seeing more and more people that only do that, that really specialize in just those kind of decks. But anyway, but as Bethany said, the median rate was 75. It looked like half of respondents made between $50 and $100. Well, and do you have any sense of how that stacks up to other design professions? I know that's a hard question because there's, you know, lots of other design professions, but did you do any sort of comparison on that?
We didn't, but I have recently just kind of gone through and been looking at essentially when I was considering, you know, our intern and our, you know, potentially a new hire this year, was kind of thumbing around. And although it's hard to find kind of specific presentation design rates on Google, it's getting easier. Like when I did this search 3 years ago, there was nothing. And we are just going on graphic design. But now you can make a little bit more comparisons. I honestly think that presentation design is doing a little bit better than when you compare like entry level versus median versus when you get to art director level. The presentation designers seem to be, in my very anecdotal, non-scientific research with very little sample size, seem to be doing a little bit better.
That was what I got when I did ZipRecruiter a couple of years ago at your suggestion. The print people that came to me were throwing out hourly rates that were just lower than, you know, and people with like 10, 20 years of experience were throwing out lower rates than presentation designers. So it's just supply and demand.
That could definitely be a supply and demand because print designers, there's lots of them, and we obviously elevated it's kind of funny, it's going down, but there's still lots and lots of trained people in there. I mean, I transitioned out of that. Okay, wait, I have to diverge this slightly different because this is almost an ask. So the report does clarify employee versus freelance, and I think that makes a difference, and I think it should, just to make sure everybody's there. You know, a freelance person is taking on, you know, the equipment, the healthcare, the software, the insurances, all those other costs without any guarantee of continuous income. So of course, experience and value are going to also, they should dictate what your value is or what you're going to do. I'm getting to my point here. I'm mostly in agreement with the salary survey of which is, let's see here, I'm trying to find my notes here. It's 40 to 70,000 a year as an employee, which is, you know, if we take that down to hourly, it's around 20 to 35 an hour. And then it says 45 to 100 per hour for freelance, which I think is about right. I'm just kind of throwing, I'm now just talking because I don't know if I really have a point about this, but I think a freelance person should earn more because they are responsible for all of their own costs and they don't have a guarantee. Whereas an employee, you should feel that you have a guarantee of earning a continuous income. Does this agree with everybody? Like a line? I don't know where I'm trying to go with this, but I think
Troy, you're on track there. I think I'm surprised at the higher range from a freelance standpoint, the higher end. You quoted 100. I'm not looking at the survey right now, but I think that is probably a little bit higher. But, you know, 45 for a beginner. I charged a lot less 20 years ago when I came in. I was charging $17.50 an hour 20 wow. years ago.
Wow.
That would have been wow. a bargain.
I'm trying yeah. to think what.
So
Lori and I had a really interesting conversation because we were going back, this is going back to print rate, and we were looking through our invoice log, and we literally have the invoice log from day one of when we started this company. And it's a really, really fat book now. And we had projects, we were sending invoices for $15 because it was like, so we were doing $30 an hour. Hold on, I can do the math. Because it was a half an hour of just doing basically some, you know, some edits on a print piece and sending the file back. So we sent invoices to printers. Now we were wholesale. We were also white label back then. So this is going to a printer who was going to double us and mark us up for the, for our efforts. So that was, we had $15 an hour $15 invoices we're sending out. I'm like, that was yes. a lot of effort. And yeah. we, you know, and then and the reason it spurred it on is we had another invoice which came out at a flat $15,000. And Lori's like, wait, I think we have, and we went flipping back. So we actually have from $15 invoices to $15,000. And it's primarily print to presentation. And it's also, you know, experience. And the project was obviously more massive than a few Word edits. But, you know, the freelance should earn more because they don't have a guarantee of stuff. Just personal thought. Philosophy.
Exactly. No, I agree with you.
And I think the report showed that. I think it did clarify. Mm-hmm. I think it could have clarified it a little bit better of saying freelance does have some limitation, almost pros and cons. You know,
yeah.
I don't know how to put that into words, but I think it's good.
So one of the questions was about the size of the companies presentationists work for. I mean, just to everyone here, do you work for large companies or small companies? And my personal business, I guess where I get my paycheck from is a small business of technically one, but my clients, you know, are all over the place, although they mostly tend to be sort of small to mid-size. Sandy, what about you?
You know what? I work for, and I can say this with utmost confidence, the largest companies in the world and the smallest companies in the world. From a billing standpoint and rank in from a privately held standpoint. So I'm all over the place.
So on the poll side, we're a small company under 15 employees, and our mm-hmm. primary target for clients is the top 50 corporations globally. Mm-hmm. So we kind of go big.
Fortune 50.
Years, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're generally up there. Maybe 100. Hold on. Cause they just ranked as the top 100 places to work. So we'll just say Fortune 100 is our primary target. We do shy away from very small unless they're a referral and we know we can help them directly.
And Bethany, what about the industry?
Wait, I don't want to hear where Bethany's answer on this poll is. Where's Slide Rabbit fit?
We'll do that first and then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Slide Rabbit's just a small group. So we're just six full-time people. And then we have contractors that help when we have kind of bulk needs, et cetera. So we would definitely fit in the teensy or micro category probably. But our clients similarly, like, you know, as I was mentioning earlier, the presentationists that don't really know their presentationists at my client firms work for some giant companies. So I can see why it's so split in the survey. The industry survey showed that 48% of us work in small companies, but that small company range is large. It's 1 to 100 employees, which for me potentially doesn't provide quite enough detail because we have that 48% of the respondents sitting in there.
Mm-hmm. So, okay. So I'm reading the report and I made some notes of my own. So this is a question. It's probably not in any of the pre-planned stuff here. And it's kind of another ask. The U.S. government definition of small business is under 500 employees. So, I mean, that's how our government ranks small. The State of the Industry report, I think, is a little bit better. The Guild State of the Industry. It says small business and that you define it as under 100 employees or less. And there is a vast difference even in that in there's a vast difference between the independent, or I like your term there, Bethany, the micro company like ours, you know, we're under 15, you're six, you know, and a company of 50, 100 and 500 on staff. Here's my ask. Can some of the data points be further broken down to show a couple of things? That employee versus freelance or independent designer rates? Because sometimes when you throw it out there, you say the small company does this. Well, I'd like to know like, what does the company with employees do and what does the independent designer do? And then as example, age brackets, I would love to see the age brackets of employee versus independent, the salary especially. Hey, is that salary range an employee's range or an independent person? And oh, I'd also like to know how many hours per week, because that number was huge and fascinating to me. But I think it'd be really interesting to see if an employee is working that 90 hours or if it's just the independent people.
I think that's important too, because I mean, obviously, if you're on salary, your annual salary doesn't include, you know, benefits and all those other things that, you know, so might be sort of apples to oranges in some cases, but some valid points.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, we've talked internally about potentially creating additional kind of deep dive reports that work on some more, like massaging some of these metrics to see a little bit more deeply into them. Yeah, so
I like actually, that. This data, is what I'm looking for.
There. I think the data's there, Troy. I mean, you make a really good point. I can't remember exactly, but I know Sheila as one suggested, and Monica suggested that maybe we do some supplemental reports going down.
Well,
the road.
You made the point about somebody using the report to show their salary income. I think it would even be more impactful if you could say, hey, I'm coming into you as an independent consultant to help with this project. This is why you're going to pay this rate versus your employee rate, which is probably lower in most circumstances. Or, hey, I'm coming out as a full-time employee. Here's the range for this position. I don't think you're quite in a line. It's just very hard to put apples to apples when you're talking that big range. So specialty reports, I like it.
Yeah, I think that could be really interesting, getting a little bit like, you know, we could have one that's like, you know, here's what it looks like from an employee. You know, if you're going to work for a company that isn't focused on presentation design, here's what your metrics could potentially look like, and provide a little bit more useful information. As always, the problem is bandwidth. So I think we may have to open this up to some member like task force. Of course, Monica has been beyond helpful. So perhaps she could help us think about producing some of the first kind of sub reports with a little bit more detail.
All right, let's talk about this past year, COVID-19. What was the effect of the pandemic on employment and status and pay? What did you learn about that? I mean, in terms of working on site, and hit us with the results. Was anything surprising?
Honestly, I was surprised that there was no significant impact. Really, people actually started to earn, about half, a little bit less than half, saw an increase in salary from 2019 to 2020, which is surprising to me. Although in my anecdotal experience, I will say that a similar thing happened. The first month or so were scary, and a lot of our conferences went away, and people were kind of not paying attention to pitching, or, you know, it was kind of panic mode everywhere. And then as people started to pivot and try to figure out how to do business virtually, we saw an increased need for experts in the space, especially, you know, how do we present virtually and that sort of thing. So it, for our business, we definitely saw a dip and then a recovery. And it seems that, you know, although we don't have month by month reporting info for the report, you know, I would guess that that was a similar experience in the industry.
And that was a surprise to me to see that a lot of people, their salaries had gone up. You know, some had gone down. I'll tell you another surprise was, according to the survey, 89% of respondents worked remotely in the past year, if I'm reading that correctly. But that means 11% were on site all last year. So not sure what that was about. But
employers who didn't care? Maybe that was
I don't
the
know.
First
or
couple
does a,
months
I,
of the year.
Know, does on-site, if you work for yourself, does that count as on-site, oh, I guess?
I mean, possibly.
I mean, Troy worked on-site, right? I mean, Bethany, you worked on-site, technically.
I mean, yeah. If you call this the Slide Rabbit headquarters, then I worked on-site.
And I do.
You do.
That's a good point. That's interesting because I always, I say I work remotely because I don't work with my clients at all on-site. So it's just the iterations of writing the survey to address those kinds of nuances, that took 2 years for this last round of survey development to get done. This group really, really spent a lot of time on addressing the specifics of the questions. And then here we are talking about it, and We don't.
Hopefully,
know what
this is the only year we ever have to have this type of stat gathered. Yes, to be very
exactly. Exactly.
But it'll be interesting to see next year what the trend is, because our, mm-hmm. Last year versus next year, or I guess 2 years ago versus next year, is this going to push everybody to just more remote in general, which I think the whole world is going there. So
that'll be an interesting. Actually, that should be something to consider. Rephrasing that same question to, are you continuing to work remote, or are you back to an office space? Or that would be really interesting a year from now. I don't want to think about it from last year or right now.
Yeah. Well, the survey will continue to evolve, and so will the report. We obviously had some great points about potentially what should happen in the next edition today. And I think we're always looking to improve how the Guild's resources can be more helpful to people in the industry. So these will be noted for sure, so that we can grow and become more helpful.
So let's switch gears a little bit here. We've talked about the benefits and the salaries and everything. And I do recommend that people get the survey. Bethany will give us some information on that. But let's talk about the software that people use. What kind of presentation software? Are there any other tools? Before we go to the survey, I'm curious what you guys, let's tell everybody what we use. I know what you use, but
Still 99% PowerPoint. We know that.
Yep. I'd say I'm 95% PowerPoint, maybe 1% Google Slides. And then I did add the Adobe Suite, because I know that the survey asks all kinds of software questions. So I'd say maybe 4% on the Adobe Suite.
I like how, Sandy, you included the Adobe Suite, because I was thinking strictly presentation slide development, but that would be, on slide development, Nolan, it's all PowerPoint for us. And we dabble in a few other things here and there, but nothing that could even rank as a, we do internal projects on other platforms more regularly than we do for clients, just so that we're up to speed and familiar with Google Slides. We continuously do some work in Keynote. I'm doing some stuff with for the whole team right now. We're having fun playing with that, because it is, even though it's not really a slide development platform, it does have the ability to create backgrounds and put content on them and stuff. So we're playing with that right now.
So from the just looking at the survey, 96% frequently use PowerPoint and 6% frequently use Google Slides. And I know that the phrasing of that, and then 17% sometimes Google Slides. So I don't know. Again, it's always hard, since we have to pivot as designers, it's hard to know, but I think that probably tracks pretty well with, I think, what's out there, what people are using.
What do you guys use, Bethany?
We're actually probably more heavily Google Slides than almost any other small agency I know. Potentially Bright Carbon does, I think, some work in Google Slides, but we end up actually doing a lot. We're probably like 30% Google Slides. And that comes with a lot of interesting challenges, because of course you don't even store the files in the same way. So we have kind of two different file storage systems depending on the client. But the rest of it's all PowerPoint. We only, for slide production at least, we do some, print or social kind of design, and that would be in the Adobe Suite. But otherwise we just use the Adobe Suite to support what goes into PowerPoint and Google Slides.
Well, I know who to send my Google Slide clients to now, because, oh my goodness.
Send them over.
You got it. Oh, so what about the survey? What were the survey results, Bethany?
So mostly everybody's in PowerPoint still. It's like 96% using PowerPoint frequently.
All right. So there's a lot we didn't cover. There's a lot more detail. It's a big report. Is it available to everyone?
It is.
Or do you have to be a member?
You do not have to be a member, although you should be. Why not? We have so many great resources. But anyone can access the report. So just go to presentationguild.org, and then under the resources tab, I think it's like the second one down, it's called the State of the Industry Report. And you can go there, and you'll have to enter an email if you're not a member. If you're a member, go ahead and log in, and you can just automatically download it. And you'll have your free copy.
We'll put the link in the show notes too, so everyone will have access to it.
I feel like all those headhunters and everything that we get contacted from should have a copy of this in their back pocket. Absolutely. I think every time I get contacted, do you know anybody this, that, I always send them to the presentation guild, but I should say, mm-hmm. and look at the salary, because my guess is you're not offering enough.
Right.
So it's a really great thing. Nobody has any excuse not to download it. It's very readable. You can go through it pretty quickly and get some really good insight into what this is that we do.
Hey, this has been great. Thank you for hanging out with us today, Bethany. It's been so fun and exciting. And to hear a little bit more about SlideRabbit, as well as the Presentation Guild work and opportunities. So the 2021 State of the Industry and Salary Survey is, as it says on the webpage, this is a quote, "See where you stand relative to your peers as to education, salary, hours worked, and economic impact of COVID-19. End quote. In addition, it's completely free to everyone this year, so you have to get a copy of it today from the Presentation Guild website. No excuses, no money down, no special offers. Just go get it. Hey, let's transition from a focused conversation to some randomness of presentation, industry news, and a round of pro and tech tips. Okay, pro and tech tips. I've got one. It was Father's Day recently, and I got an awesome gift, which is something I actually had no idea of what it was. I didn't even know these things existed previously. So I'm going to tout the Apple AirTags. I have never heard of these. They are the coolest thing. So you guys on camera can see me. They are literally a little disc. And this one, I'm going to hold it up really close to the camera here. Whoop, nope, wrong camera. I'm going to hold it up to the camera so they can see it. It actually got monogrammed with TLC on it. So they're on an iPhone, they're in the Apple ecosystem. They literally show up and I can tag each one as to what it is. So this one goes with my keys. So it literally says Troy's keys. And then I have another one for my bag. We're having a case shipped to another event. So I'm going to throw one in there and it's going to kind of be hidden so that we can, I mean, it's just crazy how you can track them. And then on your phone, it has I don't remember what the feature is, but it's like from the movies. It literally has an arrow as you get closer, it points you in which direction it is. It doesn't say it's in this building. It'll literally take you to within a 10-foot circle around it. So these little Apple AirTags, I didn't buy them, so I have no idea how much they actually are. I will throw the web page.
I can't remember. I almost bought one. Yeah, when I was in New York, I wanted to buy a set of three, and they didn't have my color. So I decided to order it online, and I haven't done it yet.
I didn't even know there's colors. It is white on the back with our logo. Anyways, it's very, very cool. I'm really excited about them. They're something I'd never even heard of until just this past Father's Day, and now I've got them already, all four of them in use, and I'm thinking I need more. So, and they're just cool how they show up on the iPhone, in your Find Me. Find my app. That's right. So there's my little pro tip.
I think they're cool. They're really cool.
My pro tip is a new website called artvee.com. That's artvee.com. And this is I guess you could call it a stock site. It's a search site for up to, I think, 40 museums have collected their public domain artwork. So you can search, a lot of museums are making their artwork available with high-res downloads, things that are in the public domain. So this will search, I think, over 40 major museums, and you can just type in Van Gogh or, Monet or whatever, and just get taken right to these high-res downloads. So if you're looking, you don't have to jump around from museum to museum to find them. It's really cool. I really like it. So it's being added to my stock resources list. It's called artvee.com.
Okay, so I'll go next. I have another Apple recommendation. I bet you both have iWatches or whatever they're called these days, Apple Watches.
I do.
Do you?
My husband does. Do you? No, because my husband is too competitive, and with the pedometer, he's like... So I won't wear one.
Bethany, just put it on the dog. It'll get all the activity reports for you if you just let the dog wear it.
Okay, but here's one thing I don't see a lot of people using. 95% of the time, I use the Apple Pay on my watch.
Really?
Seriously, it's a double click on my watch. I scan it, and I'm I'm out the door. I started using it during COVID, not because of COVID, but I realized that, man, this is pretty efficient. I don't have to give someone my card. They're not going to touch it and give it back to me. I was kind of weird that way. So I suggest if you have an Apple Watch that you activate your, what's it called? Apple Pay, and sync it with your watch, because it's pretty darn slick.
I've never used it for that.
Mm-mm. Try it.
I've used it on my phone. I've used it on my phone, but never on my watch.
Huh. Go for it. Bethany, you're next.
Okay. My pro tip was actually probably going to be a book. This was formative for me when I started managing a design team. And for anybody who's kind of getting into that arena of like learning how much to manage and how much to guide with designers, I really have to recommend Herding Tigers. It is right here, and it is by Todd Henry. And I will tell you, the book is, it's really for any sort of design. And he kind of came up in a design agency. But it's great about kind of learning what kind of creative guardrails and rules are helpful versus non-helpful, and figuring out the way to kind of best support your design team so that they can be maximum creative and maximum happy and still meet timelines and budgets and such like that for client projects. So I think it's an excellent book for anybody who's in the arena of management, especially for creatives.
Awesome. I have not heard of that one. Maybe make another order here.
So that turns herding cats into the, everybody's running around like their heads, like chickens, I guess, like cats, to herding tigers. I love it. Okay.
Yeah.
I totally did not get the connection. Now I feel like I missed it. This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, a professional presentation design agency. Check us out at tlccreative.com. We have a blog. We do a lot of online virtual meetings. You can find that at vxpmeeting.com. And we're just here. We're here for everything presentation and virtual meeting oriented. So contact us if you have any needs there.
This is Nolan from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com, and my site, nolanhamescreative.com, for lots of stuff, including training and data visualization, and swing on by.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Whiz. You can visit my website and blog at presentationwhiz.biz. I'm also on LinkedIn as Sandra Johnson, PowerPoint MVP, and on Twitter as @PPTWhiz.
I'm Bethany Elk. Thanks so much for having me on. You can check my company out at sliderabbit.com. Check out our blog, Visual Sugar, where we post tips and tricks for presentation how-tos and best practices. Also, check out the guild, thepresentationguild.org. We're there for anyone in the presentation industry. Find your community and learn tips and tricks from the experts.
Thank you for joining us for another great presentation conversation. Episode show notes are available from the Presentation Podcast website at thepresentationpodcast.com. Also, through the website, contact the show hosts with episode suggestions, questions, or comments. We want other designers to join us, and you can help. Please leave a review on iTunes, Google Play, or Spotify. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services Incorporated, and new episodes release on the first and third Tuesday of each month.